Hey, everybody. This is Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols with another Tactical Fitness Report. And we are going to talk about how to assess yourself during your preparation for whatever Spec Ops program you're training for. It doesn't have to be Spec Ops program, whatever tactical population you're preparing for. So, you know, I always say you got to get two in order to get through the training, and both processes are a little bit different. Usually getting to the training is just a PST, whatever that is for your branch of service. And then the others are a little more specific to what your selection will entail. Is it going to entail swimming with fins? Is it going to entail a lot more rucking? What is it? Or is it a mix of both? You know, so, you know, let's dive in a little bit and kind of discuss the selection. And maybe we'll start it off, Jeff, with just like how we like to assess candidates when they come in and want to train with us. Right. Some of the things that we take a look at.
Yeah, I know. I think, you know, fortunately for Stu and I, you know, we don't have the thousands necessarily of actual, you know, footprints coming into us like the Navy does. So we take a little bit more deeper look into the assessment. And that's kind of what generated this sort of conversation was, like, we look at the Fitbit, for example, right? You collect all this data. Now, what do you do with it? Because it's like, well, I don't know, because we're trying to decide what that data means, like what the information, like when we're going through a PST or whatever it may be, selection, you're like, okay, I did 100 push-ups, but I only did 65 sit-ups. What does that mean? Right? Here's my run times. Here is this. And so fortunately, Stu and I will, you know, we'll ask, like, obviously the person's age, we see their gender. We start asking them a little bit about their training experiences, like, hey, how long you've been training for this? A lot of times they say, oh, I've done this program and this program of yours. So now we kind of have a Rolodex of information that we can begin to continue to ask. We'll ask, what are the most current PST numbers, roughly? Okay. And then we just begin, like, what's your history of injury? Like, have you had surgery in the last 6, 8, 10, 12 months, 18 months, whatever it may be? Do you have scoliosis as a child? Stuff like that, where we know, like, historically as a coach, we might see, because if you see someone, you know, it's running or they're in a resistance program and they're really having a hard time finding balance. Like, I encountered this years ago where I was like, man, this kid is like tuned in, but why can he not? And it's like, well, I talked to the dad. He had scoliosis severe as a child. Oh, okay. So now we can start to formulate a better plan or a better assessment.
Yeah.
So we can get him or whoever better progress. So that's kind of what spurred this conversation, is like, let's take a look at the PST, for example. And we'll start talking about, okay, what is the run testing? Okay. What is the push-up testing? And then we say, well, we kind of have seen some holes in it. And like, what are one or two things that we could add to it that we kind of already do that would be adding to a PST prep, or at least a tested piece, to say, well, here's a limiting factor. Is it strength, or is it an aerobic endurance thing, or is it a strength endurance thing? And so that's what the PST is testing typically.
Sure. And technique. Is it a technique?
Absolutely, issue? Right. It, the PST isn't just a pass and fail thing for a coach like Stu and I. It's part of the assessment. And I say, fairly regularly, I say, you know, I want you guys to be in a state of constant assessment, right? And the technique is a huge part of that. So this conversation is for you guys to start, like, kind of take a look inside of our brain, how we go through some of our testing. So you may be able to definitely implement some of these things on your own. And when you're able to do that, when you're actually able to better assess what you're doing in training, well, now we have a much clearer path of, like, because I say all the time, what's your weakness? Train your weaknesses. I go, I don't know what my weaknesses. They all kind of suck. And then how do we prioritize those weaknesses or training for those shortfalls? So that's what this is about.
Oh, that's a really good one. Because, you know, here's what I'm going to do. I'm kind of a visual person anyway. So I have a chart here that Jeff and I kind of put together before this presentation. And it's, I wouldn't say it's a questionnaire, but it's a good assessment tool that gives you some objective goals to where you can kind of, you know, see where you are compared to some of these standards that will set you up really well when you're at your selection. Because here's the deal. I tell this all the time. I said, look, you can't just go into these training programs with minimum standards. because when you get to, let's say, Buds, for instance, and you're, you know, right now your class starts off with 150 people. Well, in a few weeks, you're going to be down to about 70 people, right? So it is easy to get to the training. It is very difficult to get through the training. And if you're going there with some minimum standards, you got to look at it. You got to really look at it this way. You know, there are 75% of the people typically aren't going to make it. So if you're not pushing yourself to be in that top 25%, now you may not be in 25% in everything, but majority of the events, you need to be in the top 25%. So your averages are typically that top 25%.
Right.
That's just my theory. Now, there are people in the bottom 50 that make it through on pure guts and will and just never quit and just barely making the standards.
Yeah, that happens. That's a rough. That's making the 6 months or whatever selection far more difficult than it needs to be.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. But that's what we're trying to do is we're trying to better prepare you guys so you don't – because what we're talking about is we're trying to eliminate not just – we're trying to eliminate some stress. You guys, yes, are in a very stressful environment. If you're very confident in your physical abilities, you're not going, oh, my God, oh, my God. You're not sitting up at night on a Sunday when you're cleaning your room and Bud's going, oh, my God, oh, my God, am I going to pass this test, this run tomorrow morning? Oh, my God. Yeah. Now, instead, it's like, oh, my God, I got to get up at 4 o'clock to do this stupid run. And I'm saying, like, that's the inside my brain on Sunday night. I'm like.
You know what? I will say this. I will say Bud's was one of the first places I've ever experienced where I was looking forward to Monday. Like my Sunday was, I'm getting pumped up, almost like I was getting ready for a race event, yeah, on the next day. Yeah, I was a little bit nervous, but at the same time, I was more pumped up to compete versus, oh my God, I hope I pass.
Right. Yeah. I just wanted to get it started.
Yeah.
Like, hurry up Monday, exactly. Get here so we can get this thing done.
Yes, absolutely.
Like the sooner Monday comes, because like people will be like, no one quits on a Friday. And for me, I was like, the sooner Monday comes, the sooner graduation.
Yeah.
That's the way I was. I was like, I just need to get through all this so they can give me a certificate and I can get to the teams.
Right.
Like, so, and I didn't mean that bad, but I just
motivated. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, I agree with you 100%. I mean, there's you're going to be exhausted, right? And you need to lick your wounds on Sunday. But if you can reframe some of that you know, typical weekend, Monday morning, I hate Mondays mindset, yeah, it can be pretty beneficial to you. It's just how you reframe it. It's how you reframe everything in your head when you're there, because getting wet and sandy, that's cold water immersion. That's going to help you with inflammation. There's some benefits to being cold.
You bet.
Right? Versus, I hate being cold, right? And this sucks and I want to quit.
Yeah, and that comes with the confidence. That comes with the confidence you're training. That comes with, like, what we're going to talk about is, like, what do these analytics mean? How can these analytics help me improve? So when I get there, I'm not going, oh, my God, I hope I have the physicality to endure this.
Yes, there you go. Or you don't have to engage your mental toughness just because you know you can meet the standard without having to be completely anaerobic the entire time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because that's hard.
Yeah, it does. It's a huge relief. It is. I'll be honest with you. Like, it was such a huge relief, you know, really after the first week, because you're just like, man, there's 200 people. You know, you're in the back of it. I'm like, am I going to be able to do this run? I've never ran this far in soft sand with 200 other people. Like, what? Like, they'll break you apart, and it's – once you get through that first week, you can go, oh, that is the most arduous because it has the most people. Everyone's learning. Like, they're not giving you any tips on, like, who's the order of rank of the cadre so you don't screw that up kind of thing.
And
you're getting nothing. So, you know, after a week or two, you know, you get in the system and then it's like, okay, I can just perform.
Yeah, no kidding. And I remember that first week, you felt like you were there for a month. By the end of the week, you had it all figured out. I mean, it was starting to click for you, and it was like, okay, I got the system down. Now let's start putting out. All right, so let me just share this. I'm a very visual person, so I kind of have to see what I'm talking about, and maybe that might make it easier for you guys watching the video. If you're listening to this on audio, I'll have a link to this video and make it an article with this chart thrown in here too. So let's share this little Word document that I have here. So Jeff and I, like I said, we were walking, talking about this, walking through it with kind of like what is good enough to focus on, because we're trying to determine weaknesses. And where I see a lot of people go wrong is they're at an 8-minute swim, which is good enough, but they want to get a 7-minute swim. While at the meantime, their run is an 8-minute mile pace and they need to be closer to a 6-minute mile pace. Well, you know, you need to take your strengths and say, okay, this is good enough. I need to focus on my weakness. So this little challenge here is really kind of a way for us to objectively give you some grades to shoot for, right? So things that we asked, that Jeff talked about, height and weight, athletic history, what some of your injuries, allergies, you know, other ailments that you may have that may interfere with your progressions.
Yeah. And so we're saying, okay, so just kind of my thoughts as I go through this, like when I say, hey, what's your height and weight? I don't have this like, well, you got to be at least 5'6". You got to be at least, that's not what I'm saying. It's like, so if I have someone that's 5'9", 200 pounds, right? I would expect just off that, say, okay, well, I would expect them to probably be a little bit more anaerobically stronger, especially given their athletic history, right?
Yep.
So if they're not initially, if like, let's say you have their super fast run time, it's like, oh, well, okay. Now, it just goes a little bit more to the analytics of saying, okay, because people say, what's the ideal body weight? The ideal body weight is the weight in which you can propel yourself over the greatest distance at the greatest average velocity, right? So it's like, you don't need to be, you know, that's what Stu is saying too. It's like, you have to appropriate your effort early on. Because if you don't appropriate that effort early on, the one that you need to, you're playing catch up on the back end when you might have, should be, unloading your work. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
That's all height and weight.
Sometimes I'll look at height and weight and somebody comes in at 5'6 and 145. I'm like, that is really light. Or they come in at 6'2, 225. I'm like, that's pretty big for a typical Bud student.
Yep.
Like if you're a wrestler, either one of those weights are fine. If you're a football player, the bigger guy is going to do better. You know, so it all kind of depends. And we're trying to not necessarily get your weight up or weight down, but we're just trying to get you to be able to move for your body weight.
Yep. And that's what the tested events are. We're seeing if your PST numbers are marrying up to the height and weight and athletic history you're saying us. Like if you're 5'8", 170 pounds, and you grew up your entire life wrestling, and you look, I would expect to have really good PST numbers.
Yes.
And a lot of times that's the case. You're like, okay, well now it's refinement of that then. So that's all it is. You know, an athletic history just means like, you know, okay, well, as a child, you know, let's do adolescence and high school. What sports did you play? Did you have a real, did one of them really capture your time? Okay. Was it two? Was it something you just kind of, you know, like I've had this a couple times too, where weirdly enough, you especially, but I've been doing the social media thing for a while. And it's like, oh, I took your advice when I was 12 and I just played every sport. I wasn't very good in them all, but I worked my ass off. And it's like, then you start seeing really good PST numbers there. Yeah. Like, okay. But that's not always the case. And then injuries and allergies, because it's like, if you've had like total shoulder reconstruction, I would expect there to be a little bit of shoulder mobility, but there may not be, or there'll be some real compensation somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So that is why these questions get asked on my end.
Yep. I would agree. Yep. I would agree. So let's just talk, you know, here's what I recommend people to get. And this is well written. You know, everybody's going to have certain standards for you. Do they matter overall in your ability to make it through? Not necessarily, but it just puts you into a good category of candidate preparation if you're able to hit some of these numbers and do them easily. Push-ups, you know, 80 to 100, sit-ups 80 to 100. Now Jeff and I always talk about what's the better ab exercise, and now the Navy has been discussing it for a while, and they're actually changing sit-ups into plank pose, which are really two different tests for
the sit-up test measure is two different not things. At all like it is apples and bowling balls, right?
Yes.
The sit-up is the apple, the plank is the bowling ball. They're not, I mean, they're spherical, kind of, right? But they're not at all the same.
Yeah.
And that's not to dig at all at it. It's just, we've got to say, because here's the thing is like, the question is okay, why are we testing the sit-up? The sit-up tests hip flexor endurance, strength endurance. That's what it tests, right?
Sure.
Anaerobic endurance. Okay, so what is the plank test? The plank tests posterior chain anaerobic endurance from an isometric state, right? The lats and the glutes. That's what the primary contraction, not the abs. The abs are certainly a part of it because it brings balance. So it's like, okay, well, do the people that are doing the testing, are they saying this is an ab test? This is equivalent. Because even the sit-up isn't an ab test. No. It's a hip flexor test. So now it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, I got these numbers. How do I get them better? And you're going, someone's saying, do this. We're like, no, that's not how you strengthen that body part. So I think there is some confusion that still lies in there because as good soldiers, sailors, and Marines, we're listening to our leadership saying, oh yeah, we're doing this new test because it tests this. Got it. We're taking it for gospel. And that's what we're trying to say is like, if you're saying you need to improve your sit-ups or plank, what may be being told you to improve your sit-ups and plank may not be entirely accurate, because if they're saying you need more sit-ups, well, you need to be doing more hip flexor work if you need to do better sit-ups. So it's just one of those things that we're trying to help you guys define what, like, because a push-up is very straightforward.
Yes.
Upper body anaerobic endurance. That's what it tests.
There's no gray area on that other than form.
Right, exactly, other than technique and position, right? So each one of these, we're just kind of going, okay, what is the pull-up test?
Yeah.
Yep, test posterior chain anaerobic strength endurance. Okay, so it's like, well, how do I improve that? And that's kind of what we're trying to get. This is kind of like the key, like saying, like, what is it testing and how do I improve it? So that's what we're trying to help you guys understand here.
Yeah, and if you can get these numbers on the right-hand column, or at least close to them, you're going to set yourself up during your preparation. Like I said, this is kind of like when I see somebody for the first time, where are you on this spectrum? Are you past the spectrum because you're crushing pull-ups? Are you below the spectrum because you can't get 10? You know, where are you? Right. And then we can kind of adjust your training accordingly. What annoys me the most about candidate preparation is when they start making their own programs and they get 20 pull-ups, which is great, but now they want 30 pull-ups, but their run is 10:30, right? Instead of a 9 minute, right? Let's be honest with yourself and say, look, this is a strength. I'm in the zone. Now I can focus on other weaknesses while maintaining that strength and not having to worry about getting better, which I tell you what, takes up a lot of bandwidth. You getting up to 20 pull-ups, not that tough. You going from 20 to 30, takes an entirely different level of bandwidth. It's almost exponentially different. Yep.
Not to mention, because I think a lot of that fear, Stu, and I think you probably hear this too, is that, hey, I've gotten these 20 pull-ups, but I know my run needs work, but my fear is that my pull-up numbers are going to go down as if I focus on the run. The reality is this, folks. If you're in a good training program, you will not lose those, right? What's going to end up happening is you're going to improve on a lot of things from a physiological standpoint going into a good running program. You'll see that it's very likely your pull-up numbers will increase, not decrease, unless the training into achieving a better run time is, I say, less than optimal. We'll say that.
Sure. Well, a big thing is just don't stop doing them.
Yeah.
You know, just because you're good at them doesn't mean you can stop.
Keep the stimulus.
Anything. You got to keep doing them. And usually what I do is when we're say doing a strength cycle, but we're still trying to maintain some calisthenic aerobic or, you know, anaerobic base, is we just do it as a warm up. So we do the calisthenics as a warm up prior to lifting. And I consider pull-ups and dips kind of like the heavyweight calisthenic exercise, if you think about it, because it's 100% of your body weight is being used. It is more of a strength exercise than it is an anaerobic exercise. Your first one or two, pure strength. Your 10, 15, 20, now it starts to become an endurance exercise.
Yep.
So that's where it has to evolve. That's where your training has to evolve. If you're at one or two now, that's good, because one or two is hard to get. After that, growth is all endurance and muscle stamina. So anyway, I have this little rule for spec ops candidates, especially, is if you're running timed runs, shoot for a 6 minute mile. If you're, you know, like PST type timed runs, so the shorter, faster distances.
Yep.
But if you're running weekly event timed runs, like 4 mile timed runs at Bud's, that can be a 7 minute mile pace. So you're either doing 1 or 2 mile pace exercise workouts. You're either going to focus on your 6 minute mile pace or you're going to focus on your 7 minute mile pace. Yep. That's how I do it. Now we'll throw a sprint day in there just for, you know, good measure to, you know, work some VO2 max and work on some speed, because sometimes that breaks some of those boundaries for you when you're trying to get faster. But typically I'm more of a goal pace type runner.
Right.
So instead of running long, slow distance and just get good at running slow, I would prefer to drop it down a notch and focus on goal pace for 3 to 4 miles versus way out of range at 8 miles.
For the needs of these selections, that goal pace that Stu is talking about lends itself to better development of what we call the speed reserve, which will lend you to, again, what he's explained exactly what it is. Hey, I'm going to run quicker. It's keep my velocity up on these 2-3 mile sort of events. So when I have to do the 5, 6, 7, 8 miles, you're purposely throttling back a little bit to maintain that higher average velocity.
Yep.
So that's what your speed reserve is. And so, cause it's not, you know, I always tell people, it's like your ability to get to a time, right, a fastest possible time. What's also equally important in that training is knowing when to apply your brakes. Like when it is like, hey, I got to speed up, slow down, speed up, slow down. Like this event is saying, this is a real high velocity event based on what we're looking at, right? A 300 meter shuttle, a mile and a half, whatever it may be. When you start doing out those 4 or 5 mile runs, right? The idea is this, is that if you're running a 6:30 pace, right, for that mile and a half, okay? When you go to 10 miles, they're not saying run a 6:30.
Right.
You might be able to run a 7:45 over that whole 10 miles. But it's very unlikely that you can run that 6:30. And that's okay, because the problem is if people only have one gear, they just go, and it's not to say it's like, oh God, you haven't been training. It's like, no. Your speed reserve is very short, because that's all you ever do is one side of training, just sprint work, or you just run long distance.
Yes.
There needs to be a meeting of the two.
Yeah, that's a good point. There needs to be some conditioning too, you know, because if you can do your runs at a lower heart rate, that's what Jeff's talking about, that reserve. You know, you have some left in the tank, and you don't have to go 100% anaerobic the whole time to maintain your your 4 mile timed run, because that's hard. That's hard to do, and that requires a lot of fueling too. I mean, you miss out on, you know, you have a bad lunch or you don't have some snacks, and then next thing you know, you got a 4 mile timed run and you're kind of low blood sugar, right? That you got to go at a lower heart rate, because you just don't have the juice to go for very long anyway. You can probably go for 6-8 minutes, but
you're going to compound the issue after the fact then too, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we're saying, is there needs to be a real good diversity of training and understanding what it's doing, because we want you to go into Bud's or SFAS or Ranger School or PJ, whatever, and go, you know what? This looks different than what I've had to do before, but I've done this test many, many times. And there's also, and I've successfully done this 4 mile time run or push-ups or sit-ups. Granted, you haven't done it in the schoolhouse that's severe, but you've done it. Right. And we want you to experience it all. So when you show up to Bud's or SFAS, whatever, it's like, it's not the first time you've experienced that technical event.
Yep. Yeah. And notice some of these timed runs here, like the Bud's one and the Ranger one, you know, these are 7 minute mile paces. You know, to get into Ranger School, you got to do 5 miles in 40 minutes. So that's an 8 minute mile pace. But if you can hit it in the 7 minute mile zone,
yep. Now you have some room.
You have some reserve. You have a bad
especially in the training, right? Because that's the other thing too, is what's so important about what Stu is saying is that, right, if you just go in with the minimum, right, those are being tested in the least severe environment. So when you show up at Buds, if you're thinking, oh, I've always passed, right? But you know you've never done, you've never passed a 4 mile time run in the Buds environment or the Ranger environment.
So after, it's like, oh, after 2 hours of log PT and after
adjusting to a new eating routine, adjusting to new people, like your roommate snores, like whatever it may be. Okay. So we want you to go in with an ability to figure it out, perform at a just a little bit lesser standard than you might be used to until you get acclimated.
Yeah.
And then you get comfort. Cause like, what's like there, what a difference it makes for you just be like, oh yeah, I'm totally comfortable doing this. It sucks, but I'm comfortable doing it. I can do it. As opposed to like, oh my God, I don't know. Like this is terrible. Like it's soft sand and I'm in boots and I'm never, you know,
yeah.
Everyone has to deal with that. You know? So we want you guys to go in at least being very, very comfortable in your physical effort, your ability to produce, to give a ton of effort.
Yep. So the next one is the swim. And I typically just have a pace, and this is real easy math for people. It's a yard per second or a meter per second, whichever one you're taking. The Air Force measures their tests in meters. Navy measures theirs in yards. But 820 is a 500-yard, 500-second swim. That's a good pace. That's going to set you above average for most people. If you're anywhere under 9, that's a good above average score. So if you can hit the 820, where most people go wrong is they're at 820. Now they say, I really want to break 8. Let's see if I can go 730. Right. When once again, the run sucks, right. Or something else, or their strength is bad. Right. Let's readjust that thinking of, yeah, these are really good scores. I mean, I'm trying to set you up in the top 25% of the class with these scores. So if you're in this ballpark, you're there. And that is my good enough.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Same with fins, yard per second. 1,000 meter swim, 1640.
Yeah, I kind of hate this saying, but it kind of fits. And I mean this just from a conversational standpoint. It's like, what's the difference between a doctor that graduates than A average and C average? Right? So it's kind of here. It's like, okay, there's got to – now, I'm totally good with the doctor having a B-plus average, right? That's what I mean. So it's like, we don't want you down in the C-minus range. And A-plus is great, but at what cost?
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, well, yeah, but Jeff, we're trying to do this best we can. No, I understand that. But you realize the PST is not the selection. The PST is like, you've just got the key in the door and the key fits. Like, oh, all right. They let me in the door. That's what it is. And so, and that's what Buds is. Buds is a 6 month PST is what it is.
Yeah.
Right. Every evolution you need to do a little bit quicker than the last. That's the expectation, right? A little bit better, right? You've had to take on more information and knowledge each step of the way. And that's exactly how the other selection courses are. It's like, it's basic until you get to the end. And just think about the accumulation of knowledge you've achieved in that time period, plus the amount of physical work that you've had to endure.
Yes.
That's what we're trying to prepare you for. And we can't prepare you for that optimally unless you can understand what these numbers are kind of mean to you. Right. And it's like, yes, everyone should want better numbers. But I think that the limiting factor for all of this, and this is what Stu and I say all the time, is like, the best way to achieve optimal is to give yourself the best timeline.
Yes.
Now we have ability to work and make real progress, even make some mistakes, even because we're talking about overreaching versus overtraining. And that might be just something, a video we do later on. It's like, okay, you're saying not to do this, do this, but you're also saying to do this a lot. Like, okay, there's a difference between overreaching and overtraining. And that's what these numbers go to next. It's like, okay, what do these numbers mean? How do I get to them? What's too much? And that's why we ask all these questions and we go over these, because these are certain things that we do. You know, there's a lot that we do. Like I look at a squat, a bench press, a run, interval swims, like that I train guys with. Like that's a point of assessment for me.
Yep.
For the candidate. And that's why it's conversational, so they understand what's going on. It's just unfortunate. Obviously we can't sit all of you in front of us and train with you guys every single day. So our hope is we can show you these numbers so you can get a little more insight on what they mean to you.
Sure. Yeah.
Because then you guys will ask better questions if we're saying, hey, Jeff, Stu, here's my height, weight, age, here's my training history, Here's some of the programs I've done with you all. Here's where I feel like I'm getting at sticking points because my run's improving, but my push-ups are suffering, or whatever it may be. It's just like a five-sentence little paragraph on your little life, and we can go, okay, now that we have this information, we can better direct you on the best course of action that we see.
Otherwise, you're going to get the answer, it depends.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you get. It's like, I don't know. Hey, Jeff, what's the best exercise for hip mobility? It depends. Yeah.
Yeah. So. All right. So we've kind of gotten two buds. And if you notice, you know, all these fitness tests here, calisthenics and cardio events, you know, are really designed to get you two buds. Now, you can obviously prepare for getting through buds, you know, in this process with the 4 mile runs and the swimming with fins and working on that pace as well. But Jeff said a very important word a minute ago, and he said the word endure. You know, all the things that you've had to endure for 6 months. And for me, your ability to endure or your durability is going to depend on a foundation of strength. And so,
I interrupt you, Stu. Stu is not just saying that. Stu is talking pure, absolute physiology at this point. So that is a fundamental strength, is the fundamental foundation for not only strength, like furthering strength, but also speed and running and endurance and running. So sorry, Stu.
Oh, no, that's all right. So like I said, I tend to ask these questions on the strength and power exercises. And like, if you notice, none of these are new. I didn't invent any of these. These are actually being tested in tactical fitness tests around the military, whether it's the TAP test in the SEAL teams or
the CPAT, DEA. CPAT,
yep. They have, what's the other one?
The Army is doing it for Army MLS.
Army Combat Fitness Test, the Marine Corps Combat Fitness Test.
Yep.
They are starting to utilize some of these strength elements in there. I personally like the SEAL TAP test, the Tactical Athletic Program test that they've done, because they've added weighted pull-ups, 25 pounds, which is a good addition to your pull up, because that is, you know, a minimum of what you're going to be wearing out in the field when you are, you know, doing operations. Body armor itself weighs that. So your ability to do some pull ups with some added resistance is a good
huge
strength. Yeah. Good strength.
Cause element. Here's why, if I may, like, so why would Stu and I say this is valuable? Right. So let's just pick one thing in the current PST, the mile and a half run time. I think the mile and a half run time for a PST is a very good distance, but it needs a little bit more information. Right. So I say, hey, what's your run time? And you get a lot of 10:30s or 10:50s, don't you?
Yep.
A ton of them. Right. So what does that mean? We go, well, we don't know, because it's either a strength endurance issue or it's an aerobic endurance buffering issue. Okay. So we go, well, how do we determine that? Well, we need to do another test. And if you look at these reason why these are good is because these take very little time to test and give you a conclusion. Because if someone's doing a 1050 and they can't deadlift a certain body weight for reps, we now know that their running issue is a strength endurance issue and not an aerobic buffering issue. So squats, like a standing long jump, will directly define what your force production is or what your anaerobic strength absolute is.
Yes.
If you can't jump a certain distance, right, we know it's a strength issue, a strength endurance issue in the run. Now, if you're jumping through the roof, you're jumping 11 feet on a standing broad jump, we know that your mile and a half time is because of an aerobic issue.
Right.
So that's what we're saying. We're saying, well, the PST is good, but if we add a little bit more to it, it's not going to take a lot of time, right?
Yep.
Now we have a lot more pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, and also, if you just tell me that, you know, your athletic history, you're an endurance athlete, and you've never lifted weights, I can say,
we wouldn't even have to go to these strength numbers, because now we can kind of see if you're a cross country athlete, I would anticipate you to have like a slow run time if you've been, you know, taking a lot of time off, misappropriated your strength training, And now you're like, I just don't have the leg strength, or I don't have the aerobic buffering. I don't know.
Or you went from, you know, a faster cross country distance and shorter distance, and you transitioned into marathon running for the last few years. You know,
not the same.
I've seen slow mile and a half times
because of that.
Even though they were marathon runners, they had slow, because
they don't have that velocity component anymore, because of it's geared now towards elongating that average over great distance.
Yes.
So I'm sorry, going back to, that's what these are. If you're looking at, like, these are all great, they're all used, and each one defines, like, again, what is a weighted pull-up doing? What's it testing? What's the body weight bench press is testing, the deadlift. And that's what, these are good ones.
Yeah. You know, body weight bench press. I personally like body weight bench press. Jeff made a good comment before we were filming, was, you know, somewhere between 75 and 90% of your body weight. Let's see where you are, because not everybody's going to be able to do body weight bench. I'm like, okay, I get it. That's fair. But you telling me you can't do a body weight bench press tells me a lot too.
Yeah. You're not. So that's, again, so we're giving you guys basically steps. Right. So from the time you go to boot camp, you're not going to be at a tier one unit. Now the tier one unit is going to do different session selection, which is going to be, you know, where I was at, it's bench press 225 for reps. It's pull up with 45-pound plate. It's all these additional accompanying the PST. Right.
Yep.
So we need to have a spectrum is what we're saying. And that's why I think it's important to have, okay, well, you're coming to boot camp, right? We may not need to have you bench press your body weight just yet, but if you want to get into the down the road in spec war, that's what your sights are targeting.
Yep. And like I said, this is really, there are really no tests for this in your journey until maybe third phase, where you might do the SEAL tap test, you know, and during SQT, they'll do the tap test, which are many of these exercises.
Yep.
In fact, weighted pull up, body weight bench, deadlift, but they go 175 point or to 2.0 body weight. So they'll double the body weight in deadlift.
Yep. That's how it was for, So this stuff was, I don't know if we can take credit for it necessarily, but this was first implemented, when I was in 2007. It's the first time I saw this was in 2007 going through selection.
Right. There you
go. And then it was super valuable. It was very insightful for me, because I was like, oh, well, now I can really better measure my sort of capabilities as an athlete too.
Yeah. My big thing here on these is, if you can do anywhere close to this, these numbers, you've at least gone through a cycle or two of strength training, which, like I said, will add to your durability factor when you are under boats and under logs and under a ruck, or fireman carrying somebody. You know, you need that base strength where you get it from these lifts.
Yep. Because we're talking strength is your ability to contract at a greater force. So in the same way we're talking about the run, if you can contract at a higher average force over more distance, right? Like the deadlift for reps, that's what it's testing. It's like, how many reps is your distance, right? We're picking a body weight that is relative to something you need to carry, your own body weight. So if you can carry your own body weight over a greater distance, or an additional body weight over a greater distance, and you do it enough, you actually begin to do it over a higher average velocity.
Yeah.
Now that is what we call like the speed reserve or the strength reserve. Okay. So that's what we're trying to do, is like, it's not like, hey, we're testing to see if you pass fail. The tests are what we look at to say what you need to improve. And the test is the mechanism of improvement, right? It's strength endurance. It's absolute strength. It's aerobic endurance. That's what each one of these is testing, a parameter of that.
Yep. So I know you like this next one, Jeff, the 300-yard shuttle run.
Yep.
And I've seen it done a couple of different ways. I've seen it with six 50s. And I've also seen it with 12 25s.
Yeah.
So whatever.
I prefer the 50s or the hundreds, but even that, I still prefer the 50, because we got to see if the body can decelerate and accelerate.
Yeah.
I think 25 is a bit much. Yes. And I like to do it three times, like a 1-to-1 work to rest ratio. Woo. Trying to do it for a minute, off a minute, on a minute, off a minute, on a minute. And that was a big test that we did. that I continue to use as a complement to the mile and a half.
Yes. And what does it measure? You were mentioning earlier, you know, because I know we hate sit-ups.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? We're testing anaerobic buffering, right? We're testing strength endurance. That's what it is, like hypertrophy type stuff, right?
Yep.
What you achieve in hypertrophy, you achieve more strength endurance.
Yes.
So it's like, hey, my 300 meter shuttle run time is, because this is what you see. You'll see, just like we talked about, you'll see someone like running like a 7 minute mile and a half, but they struggled the 300 meter shuttle. So now I know conclusively that is now a strength endurance issue,
yes,
not an aerobic buffering issue. So that's what I mean by complement,
yep,
right? The one amount, like, so the 300 meter by itself doesn't give us enough. We need to complement it with something a little bit longer where you get into a little bit more of aerobic buffering, right? Oxygen buffering.
Yep.
So that's why they complement each other so well. That's why the deadlift, right? The deadlift complements it all so well for those same reasons as the 300 meter shuttle. Right. If you don't have a 300 meter shoulder area, do a deadlift with a hex bar.
Yep. Now, you were mentioning before we were airing that you like the 300 meter or the 300 yard shuttle run because it is focusing a lot on your hip flexors.
Yep.
And what is the sit up test? The
hip flexors.
Your hip flexors.
Right. Yeah. So again, that's what we're trying to do is dynamic extension and flexion of the hips is what the sit up test with isometric contraction of the abdominals and the erectors of the spine.
Yep.
So it's testing to see if your midsection, anterior and posterior, has enough stability for your legs to go and hit the ground. That's what it's testing.
Yeah.
So now we can kind of shorten that window, right? We've got the sit-up test. We go, well, let's see if this plays out in the run. Well, it doesn't play out well in the 1.5 miles sometimes because it's just too long initially.
Yep.
But if we do the 300 meter shuttle, now we'll see if the breakdown is earlier, then it's like, oh yeah, I hit this wall a mile and a half at the mile. Well, it may not be a hip flexor issue. But if we do the 300 meter shuttle and you see a breakdown right away, we know that your mile and a half is being hindered by your strength endurance of your hip flexors.
Yep.
That's what these tests do, guys, folks.
Yeah.
It's really not just, hey, pass, fail. Now what do I do? I don't know. Do more of the same thing that got you here. No.
Yeah, I always had a little funny saying of it's your lungs or your legs.
100%. Right? Yeah.
You know, it's,
yes.
You know, it's your lungs, yeah, or your legs.
And sometimes it's both.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes if you're, yeah, you really need
occasionally,
help.
Occasionally it's above your shoulders.
Yeah.
Right? You just, yeah, or yeah, it's that overtraining, overreaching too often. If you just let yourself heal.
True.
Right.
Those you need are to take all a recovery day. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So standing long jump, that's a classic or for just pure power.
Yep.
If you definitely want to be able to jump higher than your body height,
yep,
right? If you can go a little bit past that, another foot past that, that's probably in the zone where is, you know, the good zone to be in. 90 inches, yep, is actually probably pretty advanced. I'm not sure why I put that in there.
Yeah, no, that's just, yeah, like, so yeah, yeah, so I guess it's, yeah, it's your body height is your goal.
Yeah.
So I think the record right now, the world record is like 11 feet, 9 inches, something like that. And that's smoking. Like, but then, yeah, you start getting going, like the long jump world record is like almost 30 feet. And you're like, holy moly, how, yeah, is someone jumping that? Right.
Yeah. I mean, so, think about what you just said. I mean, that's almost 140 inches.
I know. It's crazy.
Right? and so then I put 90 inches. I'm like, yeah, that doesn't seem too bad. Then
yeah,
I did it myself the other day and I was like 84.
You know? Yeah. So like I was saying, like typically for us, it was like, it depends on the age, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So it all depends too, but we see that training experience really matters a lot in that. And then,
yep,
just learning technique matters a ton as well.
Yes. Very true. Back squats or front squats. Do you have a preference for this one?
Yeah. I think that they're, well, two things. Like the back squat is a great thing just because it tests what it tests, strength endurance, at a certain percentage, right? We're saying 1.5 times body weight. That is a strength endurance number.
Yep.
Typically,
yep,
not an absolute strength. Some it will be an absolute strength issue.
Sure.
So that's why there's a range.
Yes.
But I think it's good, you know, but like some of these are better than others only for the reason of who is teaching. Do we have a consistent, reliable, objective measure? Like what is a good squat? Is it depth? Because then we're like, well, just to 90, past 90, then it becomes a big pissing contest of who's right.
Sure.
So it's good. It's really good. And that's why you start seeing these squats at the upper echelon of selections, right? And not the like the boot camp type.
Yeah.
So these are all really good, because now when you get down the road of selection training, more is expected of me as a candidate. Well, this is it right here. I expect more out of you. Now we have to squat properly for 1.5 times your body weight, because it does a much better job of testing lower limb strength.
Yes.
Better than running, better than jumping, better than really anything. That's what the back squat and front squat are there to develop or to test your lower limb strength.
Yep. So I put this one in there, just lunges. I think lunges are great. Just for your overall preparation, stamina, durability. And if you can add like a chest carry sandbag while you're doing it, if you can just go for 400 yards, you're going to be doing a lot of lunges, chest carry lunges with a log.
Yep.
No matter where you are, SF training, BUDS training, just get used to that kind of endurance required.
Right. So we look at something like that, right? We go, hey, lunges, the people will go, clearly test the leg. Yes, in part. But Stu already said it. Carrying something out front is really going to affect your lower lumbar. So it's like log PT. What's going to fail first? Your hip strength or your shoulders? Your shoulders. So it's like, how do we optimally train the hips to be in the right position to support the shoulders? This is that exercise. Like, okay, we need lower limb locomotion with upper body stability.
Yes.
So we got to train them unilaterally, not just independently. And this is a great exercise to train them unilaterally.
Yep. And another way to do it in reverse is the hang clean. I personally like the hang clean because I have, anytime you're picking up a log from the ground up to your head, or a boat from the ground up to your head, that is a movement that requires some practice.
Yep.
And you have technique. Some durability. And it's not, technique. For exactly. Sure. But it's not super heavy. Now, if you can do a body weight hang clean a few times, that's really good. That's
real good.
But
For the needs of what we're talking about, right? Yeah. If you're an offensive lineman, you need to get a lot better.
Yes.
But for this, it's really, really good.
Yeah. But I'd put in 0.5 body weight.
Yep. For 5 to 10 reps. Exactly. Because again, it's like, we're not looking for a single bout absolute strength. Yeah. We're looking for, hey, is it reproducible? Is it reliable? Can you trust in it when you're tired? And that is why we want these ranges, right? That's why none of these are reading single rep maxes.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. The single rep max is your 1.5 with max effort.
Yes.
So just keep that in mind. That's what I want to get when it says, like, for those of you that aren't seeing this, it says hang clean 0.5 times your body weight for 5 to 10 reps. Not single rep, Olympic, PR type stuff. Yeah. My PRs for my athletes are picking these percentages and doing more reps at a higher average velocity with clean technique.
Yes.
That's the PR.
Yes. 100%. Yeah, and if you can get somewhere like 0.75 body weight, that's pretty standard. It's not that tough. But, like I said, getting closer to your body weight on a hang clean is pretty tough. It requires really good technique.
You probably need just
a little bit of a front, little bit of a front squat.
Yeah.
To make that work. So,
yep.
Like I said, that's why I throw in like 0.5 to 0.75% or 50 to 75% body weight.
Yep.
It's very useful. It's just a useful exercise for that. Now I put another one in for grip tests, because I tell you, I see a lot of guys grip just fail. Whether it's climbing ropes, it's doing the obstacle course, or it's just general stretcher carry, body drags, whatever that is, grip is failing. The bigger you are, the better grip you need.
Yep.
If you're 225 pounds going to BUDS, your grip is going to be challenged.
Seriously. In ways that you don't even imagine.
Yeah.
Carrying a log was one.
Yeah.
Shoulder carrying or hand carrying one of those IBSs.
Yep. Oh yeah.
I still am scarred on my knuckles from it.
Yeah.
From the sand and abrasion. I got scarred through my palm from it still. So I love it. I love the fact that I still have scars on my hands from Buds 20 years ago. Yeah. And on my chest, I got one on my right here from the chafing I still got. And I, for the longest time, I had one right here and here.
Yeah. The hair does not grow like on my legs, you know, in between.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So again, like just because why, like Stu, Jeff, why the hell are we doing a grip thing? Why is it? Because if what is upstream of your grip? Right? All the muscles you need to do a pull-up.
Yeah.
Right? That is why, because it's like I said before about the walking lunge with the weight in front of you, you might have great leg strength, but proportionally you might have lower lumbar strength. So now that's become the limiting factor where your legs can only make up so much of it because it's such a crucial muscle group. Well, we can say definitively that your grip is extremely crucial in a selection. So people go, well, what's the best way to develop grip then? It's like, well, take a good grip position, number one. And the second one is choosing appropriate weight in the programming so that grip is still a challenge and not a failure.
Yep. And like I said, I like to hang like after a max set of pull-ups.
You bet. You
know, hang up there. Now, don't let yourself just completely relax and dead hang. I mean, like actually – rack your shoulders a little bit so you're yep. actually putting engage. Some deltoid flexion in there yep. Just because you know your rotators will hate you for
right
you know doing straight dead hang. If your shoulder's touching your ear right your shoulders are like way too relaxed. You just got
be an flex. Active participant, stay engaged. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And then farmer walks, they're just the classic.
So awesome. So yeah. and so let me give you this piece of advice for anyone that's doing the farmer's walk, and Stu already said it, really, kind of the way I'm known for saying shoulders are poison for your ears, right? A farmer's walk should not be done in a shrug position. Mm-hmm. You should be flexing your lats and your triceps, right? Because what are we doing? We've added a mass to our upper body, right? We've removed the arm swing that gives us cadence. So what we want to do with the arm swing comes from lat engagement, primarily with glutes. So if we're holding weights, we want to flex our lats, almost like you got air lats at the gym, literally like yeah. that. Think about yeah. the dudes that are walking around with air lats in the gym. Flex your lats and carry. What you're going to see is you're going to really stabilize your upper body. Why? So your lower legs can just go like hell.
Yep.
Because if your lower legs are trying to balance you on an uneven, soft sand surface and create locomotion, that's a problem. So we want to take as much balance into account in your upper body as we can. Stabilize that log, those, you know, the boat, stabilize all these things you have to carry. So stabilize those weights in your hand with your upper body so your lower body can just move like hell.
You know what I like to do? I like to do farmer walks with one dumbbell. So that really forces me to engage everything to balance it out so I'm not walking sideways.
Yeah, right? Walk
so
straight.
So I'm as walking if you don't straight. Have a weight. And then you want to top it off a little more. Add steps. So yep. up and down a flight of steps with it. And then yep. when your grip dies, switch hands, keep going. And that's yep. another way of just engaging, you know, hips and lower back and
yep.
pure core stability while you're in there. So
yeah, it's all good. And that's the cans because what we're trying to do is we know that adding a 35 pound kettlebell and carried up the stairs is certainly going to want to shift you.
Yes.
Right. So the goal is to maintain that vertical posture through a muscle contraction.
Yep.
Now you know you're developing the muscles that are contracting. Then you switch sides and do it again. Yep. Right. It's systematic. And that's why I was saying give yourself enough timeline so you can go through these things and really see that improvement.
So after we've done this, Jeff, anything that you would add in these blank spots down here at the bottom?
You know, there's certainly things we could add later on, but you know, again, going through selection, or it's like the specificity of like the CPAP for firefighters.
Sure.
What a great test that is.
Yeah.
For those that for that. So like now we've got apparatuses that are specifically targeting job specific tasks of that job, of that, you yep. know, the profession. So this only really being a physical test. Now, because I know that there are other physical tests, like the Army is doing a little more specific type testing. But when you get to the units, you'll see even more of them. And basically, it's these with an additional stressor, sure. right? It might be an unbalanced carry. You might have to shoot
yep.
Before and or after it, right, kind of thing. Or, you know, this is like, think about what the obstacle course is. Obstacle course is like all of this stuff just kind of mixed together as to a body movement. That's sure. That's why obstacle courses are so good, because they challenge nearly every aspect of this. And depending on the length of the obstacle course, like the Spartan race where that is aerobic, most obstacle courses in selection are anaerobic or strength endurance tests. So, you know, I think that the obstacle course racing is in there when you get to selection. And then, you know, then you'll see different swimming parameters at BUDS and, you know, probably definitely some different rucking parameters within the Marine Corps and also the Army. And then again, you go to the PJ side, you're going to see, you know, medical emergency type scenarios plugged into these, which is very appropriate, right? So that's what in sport you get specificity. In sport, on the tactical side, you get specificity in the job.
Yeah, stretcher carries big on the grip.
Yep.
You carrying a stretcher, let me tell you. That's
That is – or Skedco drag. I see you start getting dummy drags. You start getting those sort of things. And I think that those are more difficult to do just because you'd have to standardize the dummy, right? You really have to standardize, you know, the instruction. So, like, looking at these events, what we're trying to do is we don't want to have to spend a lot of time teaching it, because now we've really reduced the ability to get people through.
Yep. You know, my biggest change I think I would do is I like the addition of the plank. Maybe do sit-ups and plank, right? A minute sit-ups, 2 minute plank, you know, works front and back, right? Yep. You know, to a degree, just a little bit different. Or the hanging knee up. I love that one too, that the Army's doing now. They got rid of sit-ups. They're doing, you know, hanging knee up, which is actually really hard. You got to take your knees to your elbows. So you almost have to do a half pull up. That's a grip exercise right there. But my problem, if I were redoing this myself, I would do the TRX atomic push-up in place of sit-ups and push-ups. Yep. So you do your feet are in the straps. So you're suspended in a plank position, kind of unstable plank position. So you're already engaged, and you do a push-up, and you do a knee up. Got to bring your knees up under your chest and bring it back out. How many can you do in whatever, a minute?
Yeah.
Minutes, probably plenty. But that's a good way to combine both movements of the hips.
And it's safe, right? Yeah, you're not suspended 6 feet off the ground, right? So it's, you know, I'm glad, honestly, that I'm not in charge of making these decisions technically. Oh, no.
Yeah.
But again, that's why I always say too, there's no, like, just like I'd say, there's no bad programming. There's just poor execution. And the same thing. It's like, there's no real bad selection parameters. It's just how deep can we find meaning in them? The more that there are, the more meaning we can draw from them. The fewer there are, right? If there's overlap. So it's like, why are we doing the sit-up in a mile and a half run? They test the exact same thing more or less. From a muscle skeletal system, they do.
Sure.
From an aerobic anaerobic system, it depends on that person, but they're testing the same thing. It seems redundant.
Well, so check out this for redundancy. The Navy has changed their push-ups for 2 minutes to cadence push-ups for 2 minutes. So maxing it out is 60 in 2 minutes. So that's each movement is a second. So up, down is 2 seconds, right? Uh-huh. You do that for 2 minutes. Then they have to do a plank pose, right? So what did they just do there? You know, they're doing to max out a plank, you've just basically done a plank for 2 minutes already.
Yeah.
You know,
it's tough.
Yeah. So they're basically redundantly training that posterior side of, you know,
and that's, you know, I think that comes from mistaking the idea. Again, I don't know. I wasn't in the meeting. I wasn't the decision maker, but it is my guess based on that the powers that be think that the plank is an abdominal exercise, and it is not. So, I mean,
it's certainly a full body. Engaged? It's a full body isometric.
Yeah. But if we started looking at the biological activity of the muscle groups engaged, the abs would be at the very closest, they'd be probably the fourth or fifth most active. So you certainly have your lats and glutes would be number one and two, right? Yeah. The next one certainly is going to be the triceps or pecs. So at best case scenario, the abdominals are the fifth most active muscle group in that test, right? Because if someone fails to do a plank well, at no point am I going to prescribe sit-ups or abdominal work. I'm going to prescribe lat and glute engagement work. That's it. Right. And then I'm going to, you know, then I'm going to have them do tricep work. And then that's it. Those are the only three things I'm probably going to prescribe, but I will certainly not prescribe abdominal work if someone's failing. And that's what the problem is going to happen is you're going to have a bunch of people testing the sit, like failing the plank. They're going to prescribe sit-ups and the plank is going to get worse.
Could be.
That's what, that's what I
perceive happening. And they're going to go from this. They're going to go from not, let's say they do 80, 85 sit-ups in 2 minutes. Well, they're crunches. They're not really sit-ups. So even easier. So the Navy, and you're crushing these crunches. You don't even have to practice them. You're good at them. They're just, they come natural to you. You know, maybe you're a runner. And then now you can't pass the plank, but you can sit-ups. So there's going to be some transition in all this activity. Or you may be able to do 90 crappy push-ups because they don't grade them worth a crap. And then, you know, you might not be able to get 30 or 40 of the cadence push-ups.
So hopefully we didn't confuse you guys.
I know we're bouncing all over the place.
But I think that just folks, just be patient, take a look at your numbers, have a good plan. And a lot of this is going to work out in your favor.
Yeah. And be ready for change too. I mean, the reason why we're talking about some of these things of the future or things that are occurring right now, because out with the old, in with the new is occurring every 5 years. I mean, there's always some kind of change. So as long as you are diversifying your training programming, that should not be a tough transition for you, no matter what the challenge is, no matter what you're running on, no matter what cardio exercise you're doing or whatever resistance exercise you're doing, you will have some basis in being able to make that transition to a, turn it into a testing event versus just, you know, part of your workout.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think that, I'm glad I'm not in charge, but this is how I work through it in my head. So maybe that'll help you guys kind of formulate a plan, even if it's just asking us questions. So we'll find out if you have questions.
Yeah. Send them to Jeff or me. Yeah, our websites, we'll post it in the description below, but stusmithfitness.com, performancefirstus.com. And you can contact both of us there with programming and help with whatever.
All right, Stu, I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jeff.
We'll see you later.